Speaking to the media cameras, various Australian Prime Ministers have told our country's citizens that we are a special case, that action on climate can pretty much wait until we've sold all the coal and gas we possibly can. Yet, by comparison with other countries, our situation lacks complexity. We only share an international border with one country, Papua New Guinea. We don't need to negotiate about floods or air pollution. We don't have nuclear weapons pointing at us. All we have to do is act on transitioning from fossil fuels while being one of the richest countries in the world. As countries meet in Glasgow in November for COP26, each will have their own story about why they can't act. And yet each country will have its own reasons to move on climate. For Australia, it is the bushfires of 2019-2020. For South Asia, it will be the melting of the third pole. Welcome to Understory Asia, an occasional series, part of Understory's programming, this 15th day of September 2021. I'm Elizabeth Poe. Today we find out about what the climate emergency means for the South Asian region. South Asia is the beneficiary of what has been called the Earth's third pole. After the Arctic and Antarctic, the Tibetan Plateau holds the third largest reserve of freshwater ice on the globe. This third pole of our planet has an impact on the surrounding subcontinent. The Tibetan Plateau is experiencing the retreat of glaciers, ice and snow, changing the rate and time of flow of several of the key rivers of Asia. There's 600 billion tons of ice melting at twice the speed of 20 years ago. A 2020 Glacial Lake Inventory report identified 47 potentially dangerous glacial lakes within the river basins of Nepal, Tibet, and India. But the early warning systems have been very limited in South Asia. There is a need for satellite coverage, seismometers, and field data. India, Nepal, and Bhutan are working towards taking action, but nothing across national boundaries. From our perspective, living so far away from this region, we would think that the climate emergency is providing more than enough reasons for these eight countries of South Asia to cooperate amongst themselves and also with China, which occupies the Tibetan Plateau. There was a 2018 Hindu Kush initiative between India, Nepal, Bhutan, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. However, statements are only the start. There is need for action. To get a little more inside the problem, today's episode of Understory Asia brings you excerpts from another Zoom held around the same time as Asia Pacific Climate Week 2021. It was hosted by Joydeep Gupta, once a journalist reporting on the 1984 Bhopal chemical disaster, and now the director of the Third Pole, a multilingual platform dedicated to promoting information and discussion about the Himalayan watershed and the rivers that originate there.
We are very clear that we look at this entire region as a biome that transcends political boundaries. And there is every need to work together.
South Asia is among the most vulnerable areas in the world to the complex impacts of the climate emergency, with heat waves, cyclones, erratic monsoons, storms, floods from Himalayan meltwater, landslides, inundation from rising sea levels and cyclones, droughts, and coral bleaching. Whew. These affect more than half of the region's population every year and continue to burden South Asian countries' economies. Ahead of COP26, the Third Pole brought together panelists to explore opportunities for cross-border cooperation around pressing environmental issues. But it wasn't plain parasailing. Ken O'Flaherty is regional COP26 ambassador to Asia Pacific and South Asia.
Of the top five most polluted countries in the world in 2020, four were in South Asia: Pakistan, Bangladesh, India, and Afghanistan. So that's a regional problem where we need regional solutions.
He was upbeat. He was hopeful.
And the final example would be on clean energy, where our objectives could be really quite quickly advanced through regional trading agreements and transmission infrastructure that would enable the export of clean energy from surplus regions to where it's needed. For example, the Central Asia, South Asia Power Project will export hydropower from Central Asia to South Asia, and the One Sun, One Grid initiative under the International Solar Alliance has the potential to do the same for solar power. My key message would be that cooperation delivers results. We have to demonstrate, I think, through good research and good analysis, that South Asian cooperation on these issues can lead to win-win outcomes that benefit everyone. And that will allow leaders to stake political capital on their success. In terms of where to focus, I'd say that cooperation on environmental issues like air pollution might offer promising ground for cooperation in a region where sometimes it has historically been difficult. Perhaps cooperation on climate and environmental issues could even pave the way for cooperation on other more contentious issues by building trust and showing that cooperation can deliver results and benefits for all parties.
However, the former Environment Minister of India, Jairam Ramesh, wanted to dampen down hopes.
It's an aspirational goal, but I'm more interested in the immediate milestones. And I'm sorry to say that the milestones of Paris have yet to be fulfilled, have yet to be accomplished. So, you know, these COPs are basically exercises for keeping people in business, keeping the negotiators in business, making countries feel good about themselves. And it's frankly, it's reached the limits of its utility. It's a cynical view, but it's a view that maybe as I'm getting older, I'm getting more cynical. But I think we should really have a hard look at the structure we have for arriving at decisions.
A recent study has shown that by 2050, so in less than 30 years, 150 million people in South Asia will lose land under the waterline during high tides, and 300 million people will live in areas being flooded. The October 2019 study in Nature Communications points to massive dislocation and presumably political instability. Famine. We would expect movements of tens of millions of people as climate refugees seek places of safety. That's in less than 30 years. Of eight countries often considered to be in the South Asia region, that's Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, Nepal, Bhutan, Bangladesh, and the islands of the Maldives and Sri Lanka, we find the issue of climate justice underlines our connection with perhaps six of those countries, as they contribute pretty marginal amounts to the globe's carbon emissions. Indeed, Bhutan is already carbon negative. Meanwhile, Australia fails to act on climate change, so we are putting at least six or seven neighbouring low-income countries under pressure to maintain our high-income lifestyle. But there is one major exception in the region. As India asserts its global preeminence economically, so too its polluting industries add to the massive contributions of greenhouse gases already made by Europe and North America over the last 200 years. So it's very much in Australia's interest to ensure that India finds ways to act on climate change. To be clear, India's economic expansion is built on fossil fuels, partly sourced from Australia, and it all comes at a heavy environmental price.
All I wish to say at the end is that collective action is difficult, but individual action is easier. Countries can be aggressive domestically, but they can be conservative when it comes to international cooperation or regional cooperation. So I think the immediate priority is to get countries to act within their borders, to have environmental laws, regulations, standards, institutions, enforce those laws, enforce those standards. And speak from a position of actual implementation. It's very easy, to be part of regional or global meetings without having some solid track record at home. And there is this dichotomy I see in India itself. You know, we want to be international leaders when it comes to the environment, but what is our own track record when it comes to environmental management? So that's, I think, the focus should really be on holding governments accountable to the commitments that they have made, to enforcing the laws that they have enacted, strengthening the institutions that they have put in place. And I think the next step will be, of course, regional. Although I have said politics, the fact is that I don't give up hope. You know, we should keep trying.
Pakistan's Environment Minister, Malik Amin Aslam, wanted to agree with India, but only about dampening any hopes for larger cooperation.
Do we really need regional cooperation to move forward? My question is no, we don't need regional cooperation to move forward, but it is something which is absolutely required on some aspects of climate adaptation. For instance, glacial melt, watersheds in the north, when you have changes in one country, they affect the other country. What happens in the northern part of India very quickly affects Pakistan also. So we need to have at least at the minimum level a coordinated information sharing mechanism so that we have the early warning systems to save our people when disaster strikes. But for other things, we don't need regional cooperation. We can do without it. For instance, the one thing that you mentioned, planting trees. It's a simple thing. You can do it on your own. You can do it individually. You can do it as a community. You can do it as a government. And Pakistan has taken the choice of focusing on nature-based solutions. And in fact, in the post-COVID era, we used this as a green stimulus for Pakistan. We gave jobs to people who were protecting nature and also at the same time, you know, getting green jobs for doing that. So this was a green stimulus, but we are carrying on with it, planting, and we are, you know, focusing on a 10 billion tree initiative, which is, you know, right from the mangroves in the south, which are increasing. You know, we are the only country in the world with an increasing mangrove cover today, but it is helping us combating sea level rise and combating sea tsunamis and cyclonic activities in the south. We are also expanding our scrub forests and then the alpine forests in the north. And of course, all of this is giving us green jobs. What we're also doing is expanding our protected areas in Pakistan. So in the last 8 months alone, we have increased our national parks by 50%, taking them from 30 to 45, started a new national park service, trying to target about 5,000 youth to be employed over there. And also, this is a tool for combating climate change, you know, at the same time spurring an economy on the ground. The third big project we're looking at is called Recharge Pakistan. Now, that is a project which is trying to convert a crisis into an opportunity. We have floods coming through Pakistan every year, which traverse the whole country through the Indus. But we're not saving that water. We are just flushing it down into the Arabian Sea. As soon as that flushing is done, become a water scarce country. The flood waters can be diverted towards the wetlands during the flood months. And this will not only restore the ecosystem, but also recharge the dwindling aquifers in Pakistan. All of these are actions on the ground. So I doubly endorse what was said before me that we need to start thinking of what we have to do today. 2030 is really far away as far as targets are concerned. And when we hear of targets going as far as 2050, you know, that's a whole lifetime away. So I think climate change is here. We have to tackle it today. And, there is a strong aspect for regional cooperation, which has to be. We have to find a way to do that. Regional cooperation and information sharing, which is, as I said, is absolutely essential for early warning systems in countries, in all these eight countries, which are called the sort of high altitude countries. They share one big ecosystem, which is the high altitude ecosystem. Make sure that these countries can talk to each other on issues which are inevitable and issues which are inescapable. Floods are happening, glaciers are melting, and even if we don't talk, they're going to happen. But if we talk and we can share the right information at the right time, then we take the first important steps in adapting to these huge climatic challenges that we collectively face.
So why the resistance? Could it be habit? Perhaps rooted in the partition of India by the British, creating ultimately three countries, Pakistan, India, and Bangladesh. Pakistan has the world's sixth largest standing armed forces. India and Pakistan have nuclear weapons, pointing at each other and have almost gone to war over Kashmir. Bangladeshis have their own reasons to feel distant from India and the very country they broke away from, Pakistan. There would be other tensions, invisible to outsiders, that make for such a hard task of working together. And so, to turn up with a regional plan at COP26 climate talks in Glasgow this November, it makes Australia's own challenges seem small by comparison.
The pandemic, you know, has really forced us as a humanity to, and as a collective, to really fundamentally change our behaviour in a very short period of time.
The Executive Director of Greenpeace International, Jennifer Morgan, linked the need for cooperative action on the COVID pandemic with the need for cooperation on climate.
And I think it also has showed us that, like climate change, doesn't have a nationality, doesn't have an agenda, it doesn't have a political affiliation, and can really only be solved by cooperation. So, you know, it's been a wake-up call, COVID-19. It's nature's wake-up call, I think, to us, and shows how interconnected we are to nature and how much we're just a bigger part of that system. But I think it also, this disruption has, it creates openings in South Asia and other parts of the world to build a more resilient regional community to actually overcome the injustice and the root causes of climate change while also resolving the health crisis.
In early July this year, Japan hosted the Asia Pacific Climate Week with an invitation to all countries to seize transformational opportunities to put the region on a low emission and highly resilient development pathway. Similar regional climate weeks are organised every year for different continents and regions around the world, collaborative platforms for government and non-party stakeholders to address climate issues in one space. But this time of global pandemic has meant that events like this are virtual, online, and that misses the great value of the connections around the breaks and buffets, in the armchairs after the day's proceedings, where the real chances for change can occur. You've been with Understory Asia, an occasional series touching on issues of peace, environment and justice in our region, brought to you by Understory's Adrian Glamorgan. Thanks also to Joydeep Gupta, Director of the Third Pole Project, for convening the mid-year event, Can South Asia Work Together to Combat Climate Change? Joydeep Gupta is probably someone we will talk to in a future program, since, apart from Bhopal, he covered the 1992 Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro, UN climate summits in Bali, Poznan, Copenhagen, Durban, and Paris, and the Biodiversity Summit in Nagoya. I'm Elizabeth Poe. Thanks for joining us, and you can share or listen again online as well as subscribe to our podcast. Understory will be back next week when there'll be more to explore with Understory, radio for the planet.